I think you need to genuinely love what you're doing and don't put a lot of expectations on yourself and do it as good as you can. And I think that's the best first step.
Yeah, Cam. So how I discovered you, I think I was like on Facebook, I was just scrolling and then I saw this video. I think it was a video of you. It was like a sort of log of wood. It was like a tree log. And then you sort of drilled a hole in the middle, you burnt it, you sort of drizzled the glass, the glue, and it sort of created this amazing sort of base of like a table. It was like a mini coffee table type of thing.
Yeah, that thing was ridiculous, but I appreciate you saying so.
Yeah, and after that I went into some crazy rabbit hole and I just saw these crazy, amazing, beautiful projects that you build.
I appreciate that, thank you.
Yeah, please share with me and the audience how you got into this and have you been doing social media this whole time? Were there a period where you were just doing this without social media? Tell us a bit about your story, Cam.
Yeah, so how the woodworking got really serious was I was a helicopter pilot. I was a life flight pilot where the air ambulance. And we had a seven on. I worked 7 days and I had 7 days off. And so I needed a hobby. I needed something to do with those 7 days off. And so I'd always grown up tinkering on things, but I wasn't really serious about woodworking at all. And I decided to start woodworking a little bit and I was really, really bad at it and decided I'd try a little bit harder. And my wife was pretty supportive. And eventually she just said, you should start a business. And I was like, okay. And, you know, I thought maybe someday sell enough to buy a new tool. And it was, I don't think I was really selling anything. And she goes, well, you should have an Instagram page. And I didn't even have a personal Instagram page. And I go, okay. So I started an Instagram page and I had a couple of robot, you know, the spam followers. Like I didn't have any other followers. And she goes, how's that going? You know, after a couple of weeks, I go, I don't know. I don't really know what I'm doing. And she gets on my phone. She's like, oh, let me see it. And she's tinkering with it for like 30 minutes and I get it back and I had like 4 followers. And I was like, what did you do? And she's like, showed me what a hashtag was. And I didn't know what that was. And I thought you literally had to go ask everybody to follow you. Like, I didn't think people could find you. And so then I just started doing that. And it turned out I was pretty good at Instagram and did that as it went and decided to try YouTube. And here I am today.
How long ago was that? Like, when did you create the Instagram account? How many years ago was that?
I should look. I think probably 2016 or 17.
Wow. So you've been doing this for some time. And when at 2016, when you created that Instagram account, did you already get good at woodworking or are you still trying to figure it out?
I mean, I still feel like I'm still trying to figure it out. But no, I was just always really honest. You know, like I tried really hard and maybe that, you know, made me better than some people. But I'm not a great woodworker even today. So no, I was just posting what I was doing. I just tried to post interesting stuff and it didn't have to be great woodworking, just a pretty piece of wood or a interesting angle or something like that.
And then how many years of just doing it as a hobby and sort of building your own projects did you then get your first sort of job, I guess, your first project?
So part of what, when I got started woodworking, I met a guy who was selling these like barn wood tables out of the geometric pattern. They're really tacky, but he told me how he'd made like $50,000 selling those the year before. And I was like, whoa, like I can make that. And I want 50 grand. Like, let me try that. And I started making some barn wood tables, which is what all the new woodworkers do. And I sold one. It sold fast. I put it on Etsy and in like a week it sold for like $350. And then shipping was like $200 and I included free shipping. So it wasn't a great business move, but that was my first sale.
And was that in 2016? Did you already make the Instagram or was this before the social media?
I would have had an Instagram page then.
Oh, wow.
They pretty much go hand in hand, the woodworking and the social media.
Interesting. And then around what year were you able to quit your pilot job and transition full time into woodworking?
In March of 2020.
Wow. And then those 3 years of doing a bit of both. Were you sort of just doing it in the after hours during the weekend and it's sort of more of a hobby? Did you see it as a full-time job? Was that your goal or was it still a hobby at the time?
No, I never thought I'd be a YouTuber. I never thought, I had a great job and I worked a, it's a really long path to get to where I was as a pilot. And so a lot of it's seniority based. So once you quit, you can't really go back, because you work so long. It'd taken me 10 years to get to where I was. So I'd never thought I'd quit. I'd seen other pilots quit and you think that's crazy. I had $70,000 in flight school loans that I paid off, and I joked that I would never do it no matter how much I hated it, which I didn't hate it. I liked it. But no, it was just a part-time hobby. And eventually it got to the point where I wasn't taking flying as seriously as I should have. And something had to give. Either it was less woodwork and social media or flying. And it just wasn't fair to the people I was flying with that for me to not be all in on flying.
Interesting. And were you just sort of flying passengers? What type of helicopter sort of work was it?
It was the emergency, like the ambulance helicopter.
Got it. The emergency. Is it true? I don't know. I heard this fact somewhere where it was like, if you drive helicopters for 20 years, there's a 30% chance that you'll die or something. Like over that long period.
No, I don't think that's true.
Okay, cool. Because I think someone was like, I don't trust helicopters. Like I'm only using, private jets type of thing. I would like, and then he talked, brought up Kobe. And yeah, I think the number just seemed a bit too outrageous.
No, I've known it's more friends of friends that have died, but I out of everybody I ever flew with, I never had any close friends die.
Got it. That's good to
So
hear.
it is very dangerous and it's, more common than other jobs, but not 30% of the people that do it for a career.
Got it. Back to the woodworking. From 2016 to 2020, before you sort of transitioned, did you have any videos that went viral? Were you sort of like making enough income where you could do it full time? Was there any signs of success?
Yeah, no, I wouldn't have quit if there wasn't. I had in 2000, I believe 18, I made a few videos that didn't do very particularly well, and then I did a epoxy dining table video that did really well. It got, 2 million views in a couple months, and then that was kind of the launching point of where I went from 400 subscribers to 20,000. Where it was like, oh, this is could be something, and I had a few successful videos. I mean, quite a few. By the time I quit in 2020, I should look and see. But I had a little over 100,000 subscribers, and was making money doing that. And saw that if I focused full time, I could, hopefully do better than flying.
Was the main income from the YouTube AdSense or from the jobs you would get from your sort of viewers?
Back then, it was probably a little more from the furniture. And now I'm not taking as much furniture and it's a lot more on the AdSense.
Yeah, I wonder, like, if you have a video that gets 2 million views, how many requests would you then get that week?
It's hard because they were a higher price point, and that was kind of what I did. I just kept raising my prices as I got busier, especially when I was flying still. If I was already 6 months out on orders and I got a request, I would just put a higher number. And if they said yes, and I was like, oh man, maybe next request I'll put an even higher number. And that's kind of how I mitigated how many orders I had.
Interesting, and I guess I was going to ask how you juggle sort of all the requests, but I guess you just sort of have a price and then you just sort of reply to every single request, and it's like a numbers game. People who say yes, you would add them to the waiting list and.
I refer most everybody to a friend of mine now. If it's a really specific project that I'd like to do, I talk to him a little bit more, but anymore, I just send him to someone else.
Got it. Wow. So right now you're sort of mainly going all in on the content, trying to sort of get as many eyeballs as possible rather than trying to like monetize the eyeballs.
Yeah, and I've the last, God, quite a few videos now, maybe four or five, I've been just auctioning off the pieces on eBay.
Oh.
I did some for charity, some for not charity, and just whatever they sell for. And it's been actually, I think it helps the YouTube story. I think it's a little bit interesting for people to go click the link and go, oh, how'd he do? Did he make money? Did he not make money? Or how'd it go?
And the last few auction pieces, like how much did they go for?
I did a desk a couple of weeks ago that was a little over 8,000. Wow. I did one for Make-A-Wish that was a little over 12,000. Wow. I did another desk that was a little over 15,000.
That's crazy. And are all your orders and customers usually from United States only, or have you had any international sort of orders?
So I'm in the middle of a process. They're the nicest customers, but we've had kind of a disaster with their project, but they're out of Italy, and so they've been very patient. And but yeah, most of them are in the US, but yeah, I guess some international ones.
Yeah, because I'm thinking, like, how would you ship like something that big and heavy that far?
So it's not that hard. It's hard to get it insured is part of the problem, and this couple had recently moved from the US over there. And so part of the price I gave them was they would arrange shipping. Because they said they had it all figured out. And I said, I'll build great crates for you, but if you can coordinate shipping, that'll make my life a lot easier.
Do you like, how much percent of a deposit would you request like upfront? Because I imagine if you put in so much time for the person just to flake.
You'd need like at least 50%.
Okay. Yeah.
That makes sense. Talking about disasters, when I was watching that video I mentioned earlier, how you were like, I think in one of the shots you were like using a flamethrower and you're sort of heating up and charring the outsides, and then you sort of created a fire on the insides. Like, I was like, what happens if it just all burns and crumbles?
You get a new piece of wood.
Yeah. So I guess you've done something like that in the past, so you knew that wouldn't happen, or was that first time?
Yeah, wood doesn't burn as easy as you think. So I knew it wasn't just going to go up like a firework.
And what has been sort of the best social media platform that you've been focusing on, Cam? Has it been YouTube?
Yeah, definitely YouTube.
Interesting. Do you do like TikTok as well, or not on TikTok yet?
I'm on TikTok. I want to focus more because I do think there's definitely a future to TikTok. I think about 2016, 2017, Instagram was actually really easy. It was, you know, I'd get 10,000 followers in a week sometimes, and now I get, you know, 500 a month or so. You know, it's just, they've throttled it and made it a lot more difficult, which is fine. But I feel like TikTok is still in that kind of easy phase, that I'll regret not pushing a little bit harder while I could have.
I don't know if you follow Gary Vee, but he's been, like, out of all the social media, Instagram is now his least sort of prioritized sort of platform. And he's recently put Facebook back to the top, Facebook pages. Have you been doubling down on Facebook? Because that's sort of where I started finding your content.
I had a company managing my Facebook page, the videos on it. And I didn't do anything on Facebook for years. And when they took over, I went from like 20,000 followers to, I don't know, 350,000 now. Yeah. But I hired a full-time video guy, so I took the Facebook page back now, and I'm managing it myself.
Nice. And I think the reels on Facebook get a ton of reach. Like, I have a page with literally like 5 followers, and every single Facebook reel gets like 1,000 impressions with like 5 followers. So imagine if you had 300,000.
Yeah. And so Facebook is actually, give them credit, they're paying people, and it's, you know, very competitive with YouTube.
Oh, wow. Are you part of the YouTube, Facebook monetization program? And how's that been?
Facebook, it's been, since this company kind of was doing it for me, was good. It was, you know, half or more that I've been making on YouTube.
Wow. So if like the CPMs on YouTube would be around, say, $2 to $10, what are the CPMs like on Facebook?
I have no idea how monetization actually works on Facebook because they're like such short videos. And yeah. They post a lot more. I post once a month on YouTube, and they post two or three times a day, you know, on Facebook. And it's not all new content. They'll repost some older content. So I don't have any idea what translates to dollars on Facebook.
With your skill set, like, how much percent of your time goes into the actual woodworking versus how much percent of your time goes into setting up the camera angles, getting all the shots, planning it out, sort of thinking, like a lot must go through your mind. Is that like a big part of it, or is it pretty easy for you?
It was a big part of it. About 3 months ago, I hired a video guy. And so we still have to stop and set up, but it's a lot quicker now, because before, if I'm doing a shot on my table saw, I would set up a tripod, I'd push the thing halfway through, I'd turn the saw off, I'd walk over and I'd grab this video camera, move it over, turn the saw on, and push it the rest of the way through, so it looked like two cameras, you know?
Yes.
And it's slow, you know? It's, you know, I used to say it was twice as long to film something and build it as it was just to build it, but it's probably closer to four times as long, you know, to video something opposed to just building it.
Yeah, because when I sort of go on like hiking trips, like sometimes the hike would be literally 50% longer because you'll be stopping to get a drone shot, you'll be running forward to put in a camera shot, and you'll run back and you'll walk towards the camera. And then all of a sudden it sort of becomes like you're sort of working on holiday.
Yeah, no, I can't imagine, because I don't do any of that stuff. So that would take a little bit of the fun out of it.
Yeah. Did you initially do your own editing as well, Cam, or? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I got from zero to 700,000 subscribers with just doing my iPhone, and I edited every video on my iPhone.
What?
Yeah, with my thumbs. I didn't even know how to use a desktop.
Dragging the timeline. Oh man, that must have been crazy. And have you learned how to like create like clickbaity thumbnails, titles? Like, are you sort of really into the YouTube algorithm, or do you sort of just build, like, create what you'd personally want to consume?
No, I test a lot of stuff, but my thumbnails are they're almost always just a screen grab from the video, but they're not accidental.
Interesting. Was there a period prior to your social media growing big where you're sort of just relying on the furniture, and then you sort of had a pivoting phase where you became a YouTuber and had to figure all those things out? Was that a thing?
It was a lot of being a YouTuber about being a furniture maker. So they went hand in hand. You know, even still, I need to keep selling my furniture, because I think that is part of my YouTube identity and why people tune in to see me sell things and talk about customers and stuff like that. So they've always been pretty hand in hand, and it's a little bit less now, but still there.
Interesting. And what's the sort of space like? Because I think sometimes I would go on YouTube rabbit holes, and there are a lot of people doing it, and it's surprising there's so many different niches. But what's the space like in the woodworking space? Is it saturated? Is it hard to get into? Is there a barrier to entry?
I think people, you always hear, I think in probably every vertical, that it's too late to get in, you know, oh, everybody's already doing it. And I think that if you, in 2 years or 3 years, you'd be like, oh, I wish I would have got in then, you know. So it's there's always time. And no, if you have a decent personality and you can make some interesting stuff, I think that there's always room for new makers. And I just still think that YouTube is just kind of budding. I think it's going to get more and more, you know, mainstream, watching it on your TV, all that, versus where it's at now, where people are just barely doing that.
Interesting. How do you think, what's your recommendation, Cam, on how people can stand out on YouTube? Has it been all about creating the most craziest projects, or is it all about the story, the editing?
My formula was just to post stuff that doesn't annoy me. You know, there's so many people that think they have to have the big eyed thumbnail and the bright colors, because that's what every article you read says. But I'm 40 years old. I'm a 40 year old woodworker. You know, what would another 40 year old woodworker want to see? And I'm like, I didn't want to see that. So I've just done everything about being a normal person. Like, you know, somebody you could maybe have a beer with, not necessarily the loudest, most, you know, in your face personality.
The video I watched on Facebook, there wasn't too much sort of a, like a voiceover or talk. It was sort of mainly like a cool montage, and it sort of had a bit of text and had all these cool angles. It was sort of more silent. A majority of your videos like that, or do you usually do like a voice over a lot of it?
Yeah, that was just that company that was kind of chopping my videos up. All of my videos, almost all my videos are just me talking over the woodwork. And the reason they started that way is because I didn't know how to edit sound. So I would just literally talk. I don't write a script. I just start playing the video that's edited and I just talk the whole entire time. And most people like it. I do get quite a few comments of people that are like, take a breath, or you just, you know, you're so annoying. You should do that like this. But most people, it keeps them engaged and it doesn't get them thinking about leaving. I feel like when you have pauses and long gaps, then people are like, oh yeah, I was going to go check this other thing out. But if I'm just rambling as interesting as I can, it tends to keep people around.
Interesting. And then I guess, Cam, do you have any hobbies, or is this your hobby, or has it turned into work?
Yeah, this takes up the vast majority of it. I've been a hobby person, you know, I like different things. So I'll probably get more into other hobbies. We've got a big yard. I've become the kind of the grass nerd, and my grass does not look good, but I'm trying to turn that into a hobby so I can have good looking grass. So I have fun with a lot of that stuff.
I've seen those viral videos, and it's so satisfying, of those guys who sort of mow lawns, and they create amazing content on just time lapse of them mowing strangers' lawns. And sometimes they're paid gigs, sometimes it's just a free job for the council, and it's so satisfying. And then I think I've even seen some more extreme sort of guys who are like they have these machines that it's like to the millimeter, and it looks like the sort of golf course type of grass.
Those are the real mowers. You got to have those fancy mowers because to go that low. And I'm not going to go real mower guy for quite a while, but I watch a lot of the grass guys on YouTube to try to learn about that stuff.
Yeah, what's your thoughts on the YouTube space? Because it's crazy now we're thinking about it. There's like people making money doing content on grass. Like, it's crazy how YouTube has all these tiny little niches that no one even knows about, but there's millions of views in that tiny niche.
And it's, you know, the guy I follow, I've personally bought his ebook, and I printed it out. You know, I have it in my house. I ordered his fertilizer, and he's like a 30-year-old kid. Like, he's not like this big company. He's just branding himself well and knows what he's talking about. And just like people buy stuff that I recommend because they say he probably knows better than I do, I look at him and I'm like, his fertilizer is probably good enough for me. So why don't I just pay him, even if it's not the cheapest? Maybe I could find the same stuff at Home Depot, but I don't know what I'm looking for. So I think it's great that people can carve out niches like that. And I bet that guy is just killing it.
Yeah. One thing I've noticed is like with the woodworking, it's there's this weird sort of fear. Like, I remember I've recently built a nice platform at the back of my four-wheel drive so I can sleep in it when I go camping. And there's this, I had to force myself to run to my warehouse sort of shop, where we call it Bunnings, and just buy all the equipment. So I'm locked in and I have to do it. But I know that if I wait 2, 3, 4 days for the excitement to sort of fade away, I'd be scared to do it, because I'm just like thinking of like, I don't know how to do it, like how I'm going to cut the wood, like this and that can go wrong. And it's a bit scary for some reason.
I have no fear of failing on things. I fail on things all the time, so I don't have any of that. I'm always just keep going until it gets figured out.
What's the best way to start if someone wants to get into woodworking? Would it be watching a YouTube video on like an easy job and sort of copying that?
I just start and be bad. But yeah, you know, see something you like, and then yeah, watch YouTube videos, do some research. Don't paralyze yourself with how everything has to be perfect just, you know, before you even start. Do your research and then dive in and realize it's probably not going to be great. You know, I get so many people that are just terrified of like, you know, it's wasting the money, which is of course a big deal, you know, and that's why I tell people to start small, because, you know, you might want a dining table, but you're not ready to build yourself a dining table. So start small if you have the self-control.
Because I did woodwork in high school and I loved it. Like, we made mini like pencil boxes. I have like a bedside sort of mini table that I sort of have beside my bed. They were so comfortable when like when you're at school and you have all the equipment there, all the chisels, all the different saws, and you have the teacher there telling you exactly what to do. It was way more comfortable than me trying to do it on my own, I guess.
Yeah, but you don't learn the same as when you have someone telling you what to do. And if that person was always there, you would always listen to them and do it their way. When you're by yourself, you know, you figure it out. Or
that's
you won't.
That's very true. Tell me about the long-term sort of goal. What do you sort of want to do with sort of the brand over the next few years, Cam?
The focus is always going to be YouTube. You know, I want to make more, better content. I don't know exactly what items I'm going to be making. You know, I'm not opposed to starting a second channel to be able to do a little bit more instructional woodworking. Like right now, people like seeing the build videos, and it's really hard for me to fill that in with other, a little bit drier content. And so I don't want to kind of mess with that success. So I could start another channel. I want to do more. I have a virtual workshop that on how to build these epoxy tables. It's like a 3-hour course, and that's done really well for me. And I want to do more of these courses because kind of like that second channel, of course, someone's there for that topic and I don't have to keep it high paced and, you know, super interesting for the whole time. I can just make the best course that I can, you know, and it takes as long as it takes. So I'd like to do more of that too.
And is there any way to sort of scale it? Because I'd imagine it's all you, right? You can't really duplicate yourself and be a second person, but like, I'm trying to think, is there a way for like, you sort of do a part of the job and then another person comes in and sort of does
so,
like
this. So that's the beautiful thing about this whole internet thing is it's an online course, like a masterclass. Mm-hmm. So I make the course once and a million people can watch it if they want to.
How about talking about the content, the builds? Is there a way for you to scale that, or are you just going to be like one build a month? And if something takes a month to build because it's really a big project, it's just one video a month.
I'm trying to get up to every three weeks, but I think it's going to be hard to get faster than that. I think people would lose interest if I started getting a big team around me, you know, mm-hmm. turning these things out. Along with the second channel is if I ever get a larger space, I would consider a second channel with maybe some collaborative projects or, you know, where I could have an employee and it's not me building everything. But it's also still have my channel that is just me building everything in my home shop. So yeah, I could see doing some of that, but I still want to focus on what's worked so far.
Got it. Would it like, do you think it would be bad, like if you sort of had like an assistant where you would sort of put together the whole idea, but all the manual stuff that would take, it's a bit tedious, they'll sort of handle that. And obviously, you know, they'll be in the video for those small sections, or maybe just their hands. So people can't even tell it's someone else. Or what's your thoughts on that?
I don't know. I know exactly what you mean. And I've thought about that because there's things that I'll spend 4 hours sanding a table and I show 10 seconds of it in a video. And, you know, would it be okay for me to have somebody else do all that sanding for me? And maybe I just come in and finish it. I don't know. I personally would love that, but I don't know if that's fair to the audience or if it's totally cool. So I don't know. What do you think? If you liked my content, would that be cheating or would that be fine?
I think you're right. Like if you sort of did it in a way where you sort of didn't acknowledge that it was done by someone else, then it would sort of be a bit cheating. And you're right. Maybe people won't find out at all. But I think like if you sort of did it with like, you know, if like there's another person and it's obviously a different hand and you could tell it's a different person and you're sort of really transparent about it, I think that should be fine where you sort of start the sanding, your assistant comes in, he sands for a few hours. So out of the 10 second time lapse, 8 of the second is someone else and you're the first 1 second on both ends. I think that would be okay.
I'm pretty good at kind of poking fun at myself, so I could, you know, talk about how make him do all the hard work and then have a shot of me.
Yeah. That's smart. Because have you seen those videos of the primitive building where they would build all these?
That's crazy.
And recently, I don't know if you saw it, but a lot of them got exposed.
Oh, did they?
Yeah. Some of the ones were like exposed, where you could see tracks of trailers and trucks of sort of manual diggers, and you could see footsteps of different people.
I
didn't
think about that, but yeah, of course they do that. Those things have like 100 million views, so of course people are going to start scaling that with trucks.
Yeah, crazy. So have you started the second channel yet, Cam?
No, and I don't have any intention of doing that. That's going to be, something's going to have to change, whether it's... I've looked at some industrial properties and things like that, so I would need a larger space. Right now, I'm working out of my home shop, and I don't think my wife wants me having a bunch of other people coming over. I have my video guy comes over, and that's fine, but if I start having a team of other woodworkers coming through, that'd be too much.
Tell me about the Blacktail Studio. How'd you come up with the name? What does it mean?
So blacktail is just a blacktail deer, is a native deer to the Pacific Northwest. I have a background in fish and wildlife. I got a degree from Oregon State University. Uni, is that what you call it?
Yes, university, uni, yeah.
So I got a fish and wildlife degree, always liked the name, and it's just something that it was easy as a company to say, this is Cam with Blacktail, when you're calling someone about their order. And the studio, I think, was just because every other name was taken, woodwork was taken, all that. So finally found studio, and now it seems natural, but it was the last choice.
That's really cool. Where do you source all your wood? Is it usually from the same place, or do you sometimes get creative with it and source some super rare wood? Is that a thing, rare wood?
Absolutely, yeah. So most of my YouTube career, I got it from a local place that's a really kind of world-renowned place. So it's fortunate that they're so close. But just in the last year, I've started getting some more of these unusual and rare woods. And that is something I want to do more and more of, is get more remarkable, unusual, rare woods like that. So yeah, I love it. But you also have to be careful. I'm going to embarrass myself. Are you Australian?
Yes.
Okay. So New Zealand has some really cool ancient, it's called kauri wood. Have you ever heard of that? But it was, fell into the swamps and preserved itself. So there's like 50,000 year old wood, and it's absolutely beautiful, but you can only export it as a finished product. And so there's some like kind of shady exporting of it, and it's like almost like poaching. And I would love to work with that, but you also have to be careful about doing illegal things, even if they're not illegal here. I don't want to upset people in New Zealand, for taking this wood that I shouldn't be taking. And the same goes for redwoods around here, and ebony wood from Africa, and bubinga from Africa. So ethically sourced, there's a lot of unethical wood out there.
Those rare woods, are they more denser, more heavy duty by any chance? Or is it just like those trees are extinct, therefore this wood, this shade of grooves is just hard to come by?
It's across the board. There's ebony is pretty rare, and it's one of the hardest woods in the world. Redwood is incredibly soft, and some of this big old growth stuff is very hard to find. They're really pretty redwood. Ugly redwood's easy to find. No, the density doesn't have anything to do with it.
Wow. I guess what's the most popular wood request from your sort of projects?
So I got kind of known for making a walnut with black epoxy table. That was my first big video. And God, I must have made that video, I should look. I have probably 20 of those videos on YouTube where I would get an order for it. So I made a video on it. And I kept wondering, like, how many times are they going to keep watching me build the same table? And so that's one of the reasons why I've stopped taking those orders, because I don't want to get people bored with the same content. But black walnut, the locally sourced black walnut, is the most common request. And it's a really, really beautiful wood.
When people come to you with the request, Cam, is it already fleshed out and they have a clear picture of what they're looking for? Or do you sort of come in and help with that design process?
It can be both ways. A lot of times what kept happening for me was they'd say, I saw that video, I want one just like that.
Yeah, yeah.
So they'd have the size, but everything else was already determined in their head.
And then since you don't, would you actually recreate it since you've already made that video? So what would you do?
Not now, but back then when I was really hungry for the orders, I'd say, absolutely, we'll make it again for you. And now I don't really take those orders just because I've done that video so many times, but I send them to a friend and he's happy to make it for him.
I guess you then just have to filter through a ton of requests that are just like, hey, can you make this in that video? And one in every 100 would be like, hey, I have this new idea. Could you help execute it?
Pretty much, yeah. That's, you know, about how it goes is most of them, I have a predictive text on my phone. So I don't even have to type the email out. I just go dot, dot, dot. And it sends everything, all the details, attaches my friend and they send it. But every now and again, yeah, I'll get something with somebody, a unique request. And I'm like, maybe we can do that.
Given that, like, a lot of your requests, you just sort of send it towards your friend. Could you eventually sort of have like a sort of a woodworking sort of company and have employees that can make these other projects that you don't really want to make and they're not for content at all?
The one thing I knew from the time I started is I didn't want a big woodworking company. It's not a business I want to be in. I don't want to manage people and have production and, you know, callbacks and customers and complaints. So it's just not the business I want to do.
Got it. So you're in the game of creating content. Wow, that's really cool. Do you do sponsorships on any of your videos or is it all just AdSense?
No, I do. Well, I've been starting to sell my own products now. And so I've taken a lot of sponsors and I'm trying to phase them out if I can. But yeah, I'm still taking them.
Another question. That big logo you have, that big plank of wood, is that like a, is that a horizontal cut of a tree that's that big? Is that how these table sort of boards are made?
Yeah, this here is just a cross section of a piece of myrtle wood. So kind of like as the tree would go up, it's just a slice out of that.
And that one tree, how long does that take to grow?
Oh, I don't know, 35 years probably.
Oh, wow. Damn.
No, that's not a particularly old tree.
Yeah, yeah. But that's still pretty crazy, like the industry of wood, how like it's a very long-term sort of business where you're planting a seed to only sell it 35 years later. That's crazy.
Well, so most of this stuff is just, it grows more or less wild. The hardwoods around here aren't farmed.
Oh.
And I was in the College of Forestry at uni. And we went and visited an actual timber company, but those are more like the wood for your house. And they're on a 70 year rotation. Like they literally like plant trees and okay, in 70 years, we're going to cut that down. And it seems crazy, but they have enough land that they just rotate through that way. And that's how they have sustainable timber.
Out of like all the timber that's used in the world to build houses and all these different type of things, how much percent of it comes from those farms and how much percent of it is like taking down actual trees from wild areas?
The wild areas are also kind of farms. Like it's not like in Europe, I guess I don't know what it's like down there, but in Europe, they'll have old growth forests that are all in a row, you know, because people have been there so long and that, you know, they can have 700 year old trees that are in a row here. They generally cut an area and then they just plant a whole bunch of trees and then they just look wild. Like they're not rows of trees like a farm. So when I say farmed, it's still wild. You know, there's all the wildlife, all the, you know, it's just as wild as it was 500 years ago. It's just smaller trees.
Oh, so that 35-year-old wood behind you, that company that cuts that owns the lands for at least the last few centuries and that's how they can get a few.
So this wood, the wood that you have in furniture around here is, it's actually intermixed with that wood for houses. So this, nobody planted this. This is just wild. And they're peppered in and they're actually like the loggers don't want them because this doesn't make good lumber for their house. So what they'll do is they'll have places like my wood supplier, they'll have them come out and go, are you interested in these trees? And then they buy them from the landowner. But hardly anybody plants these hardwood trees like this.
Super cool. Last topic I want to dig into, Cam, is sort of motivation and sort of like, do you ever find yourself doing project after project, getting to a point where it's like you've sort of gotten bored or like you're not motivated? Like, is that something you go through at all, Cam? Because I've been talking to a lot of creators and burnout has been a common topic that's been bringing up more and more. And is that something you go through at all, Cam?
I'm really good at pacing myself. You know, I don't put too much on myself. If I can't do it, I won't take the order. I won't take the sponsorship, or I won't take whatever it is that I know I can't, that I'm not capable of doing. And some days, if I just don't feel like doing it, I'll go work on the yard, or I go watch TV, or I just take a day off. Like, it doesn't bother me. And I work really, really hard a lot of the other days. And so, no, I'm not there yet, but it's kind of my personality. I don't take on more than I know I can do. And so it kind of fixes itself, or kind of solves the problem before it gets started.
Got it. So if, like, I guess the 3 weeks sort of per video, that gives you enough leeway where you have maybe a 2, 3, 4, 5 day buffer where you can take off and you'll be able to catch up and finish that project in time for that 3 weeks.
And that's why I've had to fall back. Why I've been on this about a 4 week schedule for the past year or so, mm-hmm. because I tried to do too much before that. I tried to go, and then I'd be 2 or 3 months without a video. Mm. And so now if I plan on every month or trying to do 3 weeks now, I can be looking ahead. Like right now I almost have 3 videos done. Wow. That I haven't aired yet. So I'll be, you know, 6 weeks ahead and before I even start my next project. So I feel pretty good about that. First time I'm that caught up.
How, on average, how long does each project take to build?
It depends. If I'm dealing with a client, you know, I've had projects, because we might be waiting on them to move into their house that they're building. Mm-hmm. So I might be talking to a client for a year and a half.
And wow, so that means it would also take a year and a half for that video to be released as well. Is that correct?
A little longer, because then I got to edit it and do all that.
Yeah.
And so where I'm not working every day on that project for a year and a half, I'm having phone calls and conversations, and we select the wood, and then I'm waiting for the wood to get dry and things like that. So once I start a dining table project, which is a common project, usually about 6 weeks to get it built, and then editing and all that after that.
So does that mean you have to have several 1 week projects to then balance it out for you to then be able to release something every 3 weeks?
This is why it's hard. So I have a pretty small shop, so I can't have a lot of projects in there at once. So yeah, that's why. That's a good question, but why I try to stack up projects the best I can so they come out around the same time.
That makes sense. So you'll be like, if you did 6 projects at the same time, technically you can do one, like you'll get one every week on a 6 week rotation type of thing.
But I don't have a shop big enough for 6 projects. So it's not quite that easy, but I'll have a smaller project, you know, like the end table that you saw. I could work on that at the same time that I have a dining table. So hopefully I could kind of use that to fill that gap.
What's your schedule like, Cam? Is it like 9 to 5, just like in the shop filming and building?
Pretty much, yeah. Cause since I got the video guy, we've been more regimented on the schedule, cause it's, you know, fair to him to have a schedule. And so, yeah, he shows up at 9. I'm usually in there before him, but start at 9, build and film most all day. Some days I'll build and film myself while he goes and edits a video that we finished. But yeah, and then we get done 5:36 and he goes home, and I usually call it a day around then too.
And is like your work intense enough where you don't need to work out or don't need to do any other activity? Like your workout is your job?
No, I try to, we have a modest home gym and I try to do that before work starts.
That's awesome. Last question, Cam. For people looking to become content creators or people that just want to sort of make a living out of their own passion, I guess what would your best advice be for them? I know that's a loaded question, and I'm trying to answer. I'm like, that's too loaded. Okay.
Don't try to make a living at it.
I think
people smell that desperation from someone that's like wants to quit their job so bad. I think you need to genuinely love what you're doing, and not saying if you love what you're doing, everybody's going to be a successful content creator, but that's the first step. Is don't come across, oh God, I just need to get this enough followers so I can quit my job. Don't look at it that way. Do it as a hobby, and don't put a lot of expectations on yourself, and do it as good as you can. And I think that's the best first step.
That's beautiful, Cam. Where can people find more about what you do, watch your content? Where's the best place for people to check you out?
I have a lot of information on my website, blacktailstudio.com, and then at YouTube/blacktailstudio, youtube.com/blacktailstudio.
Beautiful. Thank you so much for your time today, Cam. I really appreciate it. I'd loved how, like, I'd love just talking about nerding out and learning about wood and hearing about the business aspect of it, and then talking about seeing what your plans are for the future. It was like pretty cool to learn about all those things, and even your helicopter story, that was pretty cool. So really appreciate your time today, and I love how sort of diverse and you've really you're doing a lot. Like, you did your own editing. It's really cool to see you just someone that literally does it all.
I'm trying to do less now, but I appreciate you having me on, Andy. It's been, I love getting out of the maker space. I like having being on different channels like this.
Thank you so much, Cam. Really appreciate it. So yeah, that's another episode of the podcast. Hope you guys got value today. If you guys made it this far, thank you so much for your time. And we'll see you guys next week with another episode. Peace.